Welcome to the Thrive TV Show with Lauren Parsons, helping you boost your health, energy, and productivity.
Kia ora and welcome to another episode of the Thrive TV Show. My name is Lauren Parsons, and today I'm joined by Mark Black from all the way in Canada. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Lauren. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
It's really nice to have you on the show, not just once, but twice now. And today we're talking about the Resilience Roadmap. And Mark has just released his latest book, which he's going to tell us all about today and really talk about resilience, which has been such a key topic over recent years. For me personally, we were just saying recently being flooded and going through the aftermath of that. I think it's not if challenges will come, it is when challenges will come in life, isn't it? So what we're going to talk about today is a whole range of great things around resilience, the key mistake that you might be making right now that's sabotaging your resilience, how to use what Mark calls the personal agency matrix to regain control of your time and energy, and also why crafting a clear and compelling vision of your future is key for discipline and effort. And he's going to share a bit about his strategic discomfort method, which I'm really interested to hear about. So Mark, before we get into that, can I just ask you some this and that questions?
Sure.
Okay. So tell me, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs. Nice. Okay. I just took my dog for a walk this morning. She was ready and waiting for me. Chocolate or chocolate cake?
Chocolate.
Okay. Beachfront or mountaintop?
Ooh. Beachfront.
Beachfront. Okay.
But the mountains are very nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. Singing or dancing?
Singing.
Okay, nice. And would you rather go a week without the internet or a week without your car?
Week without my car.
Okay. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So to tell you a little bit more about Mark, he is the only man in history to have run a marathon with someone else's heart and lungs. He's a resilience expert, speaker, coach, and author. He helps people break through their limitations and transform adversity into their competitive advantage. This is the first time this has happened that my cat is a feature on the show because we're in our new setting and I don't have a lockable office. So hello, cat. His new book, The Resilience Roadmap, was written to help you thrive through adversity while others may merely survive. He lives in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada, with his wife and their three children, Emma, Matteo, and Caleb. So great to have you here. Thank you for connecting in your evening, Mark. Can you just tell me,
Thank you.
In our last interview, you shared some of your story about running the marathon growing up. Perhaps today, just tell me a bit about what's brought you to this point of writing this book on resilience.
Sure. Yeah. So really quickly, my background is born with a congenital heart illness, lived my entire childhood, teenage years with that illness and the various complications that came with it. At 23, was told you need a transplant of heart and lungs and you need them right away. And then the following year was the journey of going through the process of being listed and waiting on the transplant list to eventually, fortunately, receive that transplant in 2002. And then the recovery process obviously was fairly complicated. And then I began speaking. I don't know about what your journey to the professional speaking world was, Lauren, but mine was very unintentional and accidental. I was invited to speak at a few places and started to get a little traction and found out that maybe I could make some money doing this and that people were starting to get some value from what I had to share, which initially was really just a story. I didn't really have specific things I was teaching. It was more just, here's this story. I hope it inspires you. Mm-hmm. And as I got into working with clients, I realized that there was a lot more impact to be made by sharing not just a story, but what are the teaching lessons that come from the story? What are the things that apply to all of us? And what are some frameworks and principles and strategies to help you to implement this idea so that we can go beyond high level, this is a neat idea, to how do I apply this in my life every day? And that's how the Resilience Roadmap came to be. It began as a speech. I was saying to you before we started recording, I did it backwards. Most speakers would write the book and then start speaking about the book. I created the speech and then over the time just garnered more and more content and more examples. And pretty soon it wouldn't fit in a couple of hour workshop anymore. And I went, well, okay, I need to put this somewhere and use this material somewhere. And so eventually it turned into this after a longer time than planned. I actually opened the file recently on the Word document, and I looked at the creation date when you start the file, and it was 2018. So it's actually been, started it then, put it away for a long time, and then COVID gave me the chance to pull it back out and really start to work on it. So it's finally here, which is exciting.
Yeah. Oh, well, congratulations. And I certainly know what that feels like. And I think good things do take time, and things do take longer than you expect as well. So yeah, fantastic. So tell me, what is this big mistake that you see that people are probably making right now that can be sabotaging their resilience? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I think the big mistake is we misunderstand what the word means. And that's not because we're not intelligent. I think the definitions we're given are not correct. So I think that, at least in my case, tell me if this resonates for you, the definition I was always given of resilience, or what that meant, was to bounce back from adversity, to overcome challenge. And my problem with that analogy or that way of thinking about resilience is that it presupposes that we can go back to something, right? It sort of implies like, oh, we're going to go back to normal. How many times did we hear that over the pandemic? Yeah. When this is over, we're going to go back to normal. And the problem with that is, of course, there's no such thing as going back. Like, nobody has the time machine to go back to 2018 and pretend like this never happened. And, you know, that's at a global scale, but there are events within your own life where you might remember how things used to be. And one thing I've also noticed is that we tend to romanticize that, right? So we tend to think, oh, the good old days, when we remember them fondly and forget just how challenging they were and how maybe they weren't so good as much as we like to think they were. So rather than thinking about how do we bounce back, how do we return to what we were and who we were, let's think about how do we grow through. So how do you not just survive challenge, because you're going to do that by and large, barring a really catastrophic situation, your survival instincts will kick in and you will figure out a way to stay above proverbial water. But how can we not only do that, but actually thrive, not in spite of, but because of what we've been through? How can you leverage challenges and obstacles and changes that you go through to be a better version of you in a month or a year than you are right now?
Yeah. Wow. I love that.
So
to come back to your point about the bouncing back, that is exactly what I say when I talk about resilience. So I thank you for that gift of what you've just shared around, you know, because we often picture going back to, and so many people talk about, you know, we're going to get to the new norm. And I think most people picture the new norm being about the same as the old norm, really, you know, getting back to life as normal. But, you know, ABC happens in life, and we think, oh, you know, sometimes we think to ourselves, oh, I'll just wait till I'm not so busy. You know, once A, B, and C are done, then life will be back to normal. But actually, D, E, and F, and G are just around the corner, and who knows where we'll be then, and what we'll be doing then, and what will be most important. And it just reminds me of, you know, we only have this time right now. You know, for people listening in, you don't get to replay today, this week, this month. So we just have now, really, don't we? It's a different way of thinking about it rather than trying to go back to something.
I love that. You're right. All that we have is this moment, right? Which will then be gone, and we'll have the new moment to come. But so often we are either living in the future or the past and missing what is right now. And that is one of the ingredients to being more resilient, I think, is life becomes a whole lot easier to manage when you're just dealing with now instead of what might happen. Now, look, we all need to plan ahead, and that's a good thing to do, but we don't need to solve imaginary problems that haven't happened yet, right? And we can reduce our stress significantly if we learn how to not do that.
Amazing. Many people listening in will know that for me, we recently went through probably the most challenging thing I've ever had happen in my life, because our home was flooded. We were home at the time. We were literally lifting things up as water was rushing in, getting up on the roof with the cat. We got rescued. My husband and I got rescued on a tractor. Fortunately, our children were at school at the time. And so now we are here 4 months down the track, and our house, you know, is just uninhabitable. It's all been stripped out. We're living in temporary accommodation. Anyway, there's so many things to be thankful for right now. You know, we survived, our animals survived. One day we will get back there, but you're making me think about, what will that new future be? But anyway, the reason I share that is that, you know, those weeks just after that happened, Mark, were just the most challenging time. I couldn't sleep well. Normally I really prioritize my sleep, and I was just, my mind was going at night, and there was just so many balls we were juggling. So
I
guess to bring this into a question, you know, what are the key things that you share that you have found help, you know, in those sort of crisis situations? And perhaps I'm thinking even before leading into these, like maintaining that resilience ahead of crises happening in our lives. Give me some of your key tips or key ideas that you share in these sort of scenarios.
Yeah, so I'm going to share two parts of the Resilience Roadmap framework with you in a second. Before we get there, I think at a base level, you talked about one of them, sleep. But just basically taking care of our physical well-being as much as possible, and our mental well-being as much as we can, right? So doing the basic maintenance things, much like you would your car, right? So you do the oil change when it's due, not when the noise starts in the engine, right? You fill it with gas, not when you're at 0 kilometers to go, but when you're at a quarter of a tank, or whatever the number is for you that triggers you to do that. We do these preventative things to maintain the function of that automobile so that it keeps running smoothly. And we need to do the same thing with our bodies and our minds, right? We have to feed it properly and give it sleep and give it water and get exercise and do all of those things so that we're better prepared when challenge arises, because it's going to happen. And that mindset, I think, is also really important. So one of the things I ask people in the keynote presentations I do is, what if it's supposed to be hard? And by it, I mean work, life, raising kids, anything of significant value that you're going to experience in your life. And I say that not because we need to make things difficult on purpose, but if we begin with the idea that this is going to be challenging, it's going to be worth it, which is really important, but it's going to be challenging, then the small hiccups tend not to fluster us as much. I think we often get in our own way because we have this unwritten expectation that things are supposed to go smoothly. But when do things ever go the way they're supposed to? Like, it's not how the world works typically, right? Mm-hmm. And so we kind of begin with this idea of like, okay, I'm prepared for the fact that today there will be challenges, there will be obstacles. I will encounter someone who's grumpy. You know, I might get caught in traffic. Things will happen, and that's okay. I've gone through all of those things before. I know I'm going to survive, and I'm going to try not to let those things disrupt my sanity and my peace of mind and my, so that's a big piece. And so that leads us into these two parts of the framework. The first is accept, and the second one is adapt. Okay. So acceptance simply means how to delineate the things you control from the things that you don't. So your personal agency matrix that you referenced earlier is a really simple idea. Three interlocking circles. Okay. And in the middle of the diagram is you. And so there are aspects of yourself, your day, that you have total autonomy over, total control over, right? From what time you wake up to what you wear to a variety of other things. And then we have the next circle out, and those are things that you influence. So how we show up influences the people around us. It influences the people in our house. It influences the people we work with each day, the people we meet on the, you know, on the street, in the subway, in the bus, whatever. And then finally, we have things on the outer circle that affect us, but that we do not control. Mm-hmm. My quick favorite example is the weather. And so if we take all of those things into consideration, and then we say, okay, where am I spending my two most valuable resources, my time and my energy every day, mm-hmm. right? Where am I investing my mental and emotional energy and my mental and emotional time every day? Am I putting them on the things where they're going to have the biggest impact? More in the middle of that circle, or am I wasting them and dispersing them on things that aren't going to have an impact at all? So every time you are complaining, every time you're worrying, and we all do it, we're spending time and energy on things that we can't control, and we're wasting some of those valuable resources. And so if we accept those things, not saying that they're okay or that we're happy that they're there, but just saying, I accept that it is. Now what am I going to do?
Yeah.
We can become a lot more effective, right? So I use the idea of shortening the gap. So shortening the gap between two critical moments whenever we face a difficult situation. So point number one is, oh no, the house flooded. Oh no, COVID is locking everything down. Oh no, I've caught the flu, like whatever that is. And then at some point, days, weeks, months, minutes, depending on the situation later, we have another moment that I call now what, which is, okay, now I'm going to do something about this. And the question becomes, well, how long is that space? How big is that gap? Because we can all recognize that for some of us at some times, that gap can be 2 seconds. Someone cuts me off in traffic and I go, and then I let it go. Mm-hmm. Or it can be 2 hours or 2 days or 2 weeks or 2 years, depending on how long I want to hold that angst within me. And the shorter I can make that gap, the more effective I become.
Yeah.
So you want to be more resilient. It's absolutely challenging, right? And but the key is to practice, right? So again, one of the other misunderstandings about resilience that I think most of us have is we at some level believe that it is a character trait that we are born with a certain amount of, yeah. Right? Yeah, I have brown eyes, you have blue eyes, you're resilient, I'm not. Nonsense, it's a skill, like every other skill that you have. And how does a skill get better? You practice it.
Yeah, I think that's the great thing for people listening, and that is the key, isn't it? Is that it's a real joy when you realize resilience is a skill. And so, you know, it kind of reminds me of the whole above the line, below the line theory, which many people will be familiar with, you know, that if you're above the line, you're taking ownership and accountability and responsibility, and you can say, okay, I love that, going from this has happened to now what, rather than lying in bed and blame excuses and denial, being the victim and feeling like this is all happening to me and getting stuck there for a long mm-hmm. time, you know, which we are programmed as human beings to do at times. But I love what you're saying about essentially get your head back up and think, what is next? Because that's the thing that is going to move you forward, and realizing, yeah, you have the power to practice the skills of resilience. It's not something you get by luck that someone else has and you can be jealous of. It's actually something we can all take, you know, action steps on, which I love. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And the only way to get better at it, I mean, I'm going to kind of contradict someone's writing a book saying, I want you to read this, and I do. Mm-hmm. And learning about it is important. But the only way to really get better at it is to do it, right? So learn these ideas and then implement them, and you'll get better at it each time, right? So, and you'll also, you know, you will also catch yourself reverting sometimes, and you'll have to kind of remind yourself, right? So, I'm always thankful for my wife and my kids and others in my life who keep me accountable and remind me when I'm not applying what I'm saying right now, because I'm certainly not perfect. But I've become much better at this acceptance piece than I was a year or 5 years or 10 years ago, because it's in the forefront of my mind, and I'm always working at, okay, how do I get past this more quickly so that I'm not, you know, spinning in my own negativity for longer than I need to.
Yeah.
When COVID struck, you know, you and I both make a living speaking in front of people. That was a big oh no moment, right? When it kind of like mm-hmm. finally settled in that, oh, this is not going away tomorrow. And most of my revenue comes from speaking in front of groups of people, and that was clearly not going to happen for the foreseeable future. That mm-hmm. was a big oh no moment. But I can say that because I was working on this book, because I had lived several experiences of using this in the past, I was able to get to the now what. Like, what am I going to do? How am I going to shift my business in a period of a few days, where I think 10 years ago, I probably would have spun out of control and worried myself to death for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks instead of a couple of days. Yeah. So that's the idea, is we're never going to be perfect, but we can get better at it with practice.
Yeah. So what are your tips, or what's your advice to people that are listening in that are going, okay, Mark, yes, I hear you, I want to shorten that gap. What are the practical strategies or tactics that people can use to start to do that?
So, I think if you're sitting there right now, feeling any level of stress or anxiety, take 5 minutes, half an hour if you have it, but 5 minutes works. Take out you know, a little notepad and a piece of and a pen, and just get it all down. So first of all, I think that in and of itself is powerful. Ideas bounce around in our head and they instantly feel bigger than they actually are. And you get it on paper and go, oh, well, that's not so overwhelming. So once, and then once you have it down, I just go down the list and I go, okay, this I control, this I don't, this I can influence, I can do something about this. And I kind of prioritize that. And then the things I can't control, I put a line through them. Now, it doesn't mean that they're never going to pop in my brain again, but it helps me to kind of go, no, I'm putting that over here. I can't fix that. Here are the things that I can control. I want to take action on those right now because I can fix this. I can do something about this. Let me do that. And then here's when, if I have time left over, I work on these things that I can influence, that I can have my impact. And I'm also going to work at doing my part and then letting go of the results. So that's a tool that I use all the time as well, is think about what part of this do I own and own that, but know that very rarely do we own the outcome. Sometimes, but most of the time we own our effort. And so measure your effort and measure your success based on your effort and your execution as opposed to the result. And that applies in life and in business and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, like when I'm, you know, if I'm doing an exercise program, for example, I'm not measuring my success based on pounds lost. I'm measuring my success based on how many days did I go to the gym when I said I was going to go to the gym? Mm-hmm. How many days did I stick to my diet when I said I was going to stick to my diet? Yeah. If the pounds come off, that's great. And I know long-term they will, but I'm not going to worry about I lost 2 pounds today or this week instead of four. I'm going to look at my execution because that part I can do something about.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And I think it's that I often talk about the knowledge action gap, you know, the gap between the things that we know we could do or perhaps should do. And then there's what we actually do day to day. And I love the idea of, you know, obviously the goal is to try and close the knowledge action gap, and the idea of celebrating what you are doing and focusing on that, knowing that that habit, as you're practicing that habit, it is going to lead you towards, you know, whatever it is, whatever the goal is that you're focusing on. So really great. Tell me a bit about, I know you mentioned having a clear and compelling vision of your future as being really critical, and that that helps you, you know, tap into stores of discipline and effort that you didn't even know you had. Tell us a bit about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've discovered this a few times in life. I had to be reminded a couple of times before it really sunk in or it clicked for me. But it's this idea of, and this is a quote from Friedrich Nietzsche, whose philosophy I don't necessarily agree with, but this quote makes a lot of sense. And he said, the person that has a big enough why can endure any how. Mm-hmm. So in other words, when you know, when the purpose behind what you do matters to you at a deep level, you are capable of things you didn't think you were capable of. And there are, I'm sure if you look through your own life, you can find examples of that. Those of us who are parents can think of countless examples of times when we've gone sleepless nights and done things that we didn't think we could do one more day, but you do it because you just find yourself doing it. Why? Well, because your care or your love for that other human being is so big that you find a way. Right. And, you know, I think every relationship that applies, right. It can be your partner. It can be your child. It can be your parent. When our love for someone is big enough, we will do whatever we can possibly do for that person when they need us. And if you have a big enough goal, the same will apply. You will find a way to do it. So people say, like, well, you know, I've run 4 marathons. Every single one of them, there was a point, usually 3/4 of the way through, where I went, why am I, like, this is painful and difficult, and I don't really want to do this anymore. I think are you a runner as well?
Yeah, a little, not yeah. I haven't done full marathons, but half marathons.
You've done half. Yeah. So, you know, you know exactly what I mean. So it's exactly the same thing. I say it doesn't matter if it's 5K or 42, it's that 3/4 to 4/5 of the way through. You hit this point where, okay, I'm a long way from the start. I'm not really excited about this anymore. The finish line is still kind of a long ways away too. So I'm not excited about finishing either. And it's uncomfortable. Do I really want to do this? And that's where you have to find that why within you that's going to force you to push through that discomfort, because otherwise your body just going, please stop, and you stop. So, you know, and I think many people, whether it's in business or it's exercise or it's whatever, they get to that challenging point, which we all are going to face many, many, many times. And if they don't have an answer to the question, why am I doing this? They will stop. Mm-hmm. And if they have a great answer to that question, they will find a way to keep going.
Yeah, nice. Tell me, this perhaps leads into talking about what you call the strategic discomfort method, which I maybe have an inkling of what it is, but I've never heard of this before. So I'm really intrigued to hear what this is. So tell me about that, Mark.
Well, so earlier we talked about adaptability, right? And so after we accept, we have to adapt. So we have to say, okay, the world has changed, which means I need to change, right? And that happens all the time. I mean, obviously COVID was a very universal, global, it wasn't universal. We didn't experience it all exactly the same way, but we all went through this experience together. Mm-hmm. And so I often reference that because I feel like it's a reference point that we can all connect with. And we had to go, okay, things are different. I can't behave in the way I did pre-COVID and function properly in this new world. If it's something as basic as I need to wear a mask when I go to the grocery store now because that's the new rule, or something much more complicated. So for example, for you and I, okay, we need to figure out how to do this virtual thing because this is the only way we can do what we do now. Whatever the case is, we all have had to make adaptations. And the reality is that's not going to slow down. In fact, it's only going to speed up as the rate of change continues. And now we're going to get into the world of AI, and that's going to change everything again. And and change can be scary, but it doesn't need to be, as long as we know that we can find solutions by being adaptable. The less anchored we are in old ways of thinking, the more flexible we are, the better we're going to be. And so how do you do that? Because again, I think that's something that we have a misconception about. We think, oh, well, I'm a person who likes routine and status quo, and I don't like change. And so I'm not that person. This person seems to deal really well with it, but not me. Reality is we all just practice and we can get better at it. And so strategic discomfort method simply means in low risk, low consequence contexts, practice doing things that are uncomfortable, right? Yeah. Force yourself to do things that are a little bit outside of your normal, whether that's as simple as eating with your other hand or driving to work by another route. Because how many of us get in the car in the morning and the car practically drives itself to work because we go the same way, and we sometimes get there and went, oh, I didn't even really pay attention. Or it's, you want to take some higher risk. I actually was reading something the other day, and someone challenged his client to go into a Starbucks and lay on the ground for a minute and not say anything and not explain why, and then get up and walk out and just let people think whatever they were going to think about him. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I want to lay on the floor of a public building, but the idea is the same, right? It's trying to let go of the need to be approved and liked and mm-hmm. fit in and yeah. Try things that are different, because it reinforces the neurology to say, this is uncomfortable, but that's okay. It's not dangerous. It's not going to kill me. Because our basal brain, right, our Neanderthal brain screams at us when we do things like that, because this is dangerous, right? You're going to get eaten by the tiger, which most of the time is not the case, right? It's just, this is different than usual. And so it's uncomfortable. The exercise I often give people to do really quickly is, if I just asked you to kind of cross your arms, mm-hmm. and everybody crosses their arms and without thinking about it, and we do this the same way every single time, and we've been doing it the same way our whole life. You do it one arm in front of whichever arm is first is the way you do it. And I can prove that to you because I'll ask you to fold your arms the other way. And if you haven't practiced it, it's almost hard to figure out where your arm goes. And it feels strange.
Yeah, I think I actually just did it wrong. Like, I was trying to do it the other way and I still did it the same way. Isn't that interesting? Right? Yeah.
And it's not, but when you do it the other way, it feels bizarre, but it's not painful. It's not going to hurt you. You're not in any way worse off than you were a minute ago. And that's a super basic example. But the idea is we reinforce this idea that change is not necessarily a bad thing. And discomfort is okay. And discomfort is not pain. It's just discomfort, and we can learn to embrace that.
Wow. Yeah, that's so powerful. It actually reminds me, some of the examples you gave of when I did my life coach training many, many years ago, almost 20 years ago. And we did these weekend retreats with a group of around 12 of us. And some of the activities we did, it was, we talked about some things, but mostly it was very experiential learning. And we had to, for example, go out into public places and talk to other people about set things. We had to go and ask people to give us money just randomly in the street, which was really interesting because we often have lots of, hang-ups around money, and sort of walk up to someone and ask them if they'd give us some money is really interesting. And even things like going bungee jumping off like Auckland Harbour Bridge and just experiencing that and thinking about how that felt. And what was really interesting is all of these things, not only is that, nerve-wracking in terms of you're throwing your body off a high space, so in terms of the fear of that, but we were encouraged to reflect on the fear of it. And what was interesting to me was that I was really concerned about what the guy who was strapping us in kind of thought of me, and that was an actual fear as well as just jumping off the bridge, and so it's really interesting. We think about how uncomfortable we are, and we get comfortable, and we so often have rote learnt behaviors that we do to just stay in that comfortable place and to continually feel that we're liked and loved and approved, with those sort of basic human needs. But it's really interesting to me to think about how can you spend time in discomfort to know, to prove to yourself that you can deal with change. Like, I can absolutely see that.
Yeah. Link. I mean, so the one that I do that's a little more extreme for some is I do cold showers. So I will get in the shower warm. I haven't brought myself to do cold from the start yet, maybe someday, but I get in warm and then I gradually until it's all the way cold, and then I see how long I can stay there, and it's usually a couple of minutes. It's not very long, but there's actually some physiological benefits to doing that in terms of your cardiovascular system. But I mostly do it because I always say I do it because I don't want to do it. I do it because every single time my brain still says I don't want to do this, but after having done it, it reinforces, okay, I didn't want to do that. Seemed scary. Was a little uncomfortable. I'm okay. And I feel more empowered now to deal with whatever other things that are involuntary that are going to be uncomfortable that I'm going to have to face today.
So powerful. But yeah. And as you say, it's amazing afterwards when you reflect back on it. So it's the doing, but then it's the reflecting back on it. So powerful. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, yeah, people can come away today with just so many different strategies and ideas, whether it's that, focus on what you can control. I love that idea of writing things down and just crossing out the things you can't control. And then it literally is going to just speak to you and give you this list of things to focus on, right through to practicing how do we move from oh no to now what, through to things like doing things that are uncomfortable. And most of all, as you say, realizing that it's not about trying to bounce back to how things were exactly before, but it's about practicing skills to be and remain resilient. So exciting talking to you, Mark, about all these things. And I know
there's
even
so
keys that you share in your books. I'm sure there's so much more. So, if people wanted to find out more about you or find out how they could order a copy, where can they do that?
Yeah, so the book can be found at theresiliencerobemapbook.com or wherever books are sold. So whatever place you like to buy books, Amazon, wherever. And my website is markblack.ca because I'm based in Canada. So it's a .ca domain name. So markblack.ca. And
very exciting. And just hold up your book again one more time, because this is an exciting moment for both Mark and I, because we're both at the stage of having
thriving
our
leaders,
final
thriving teams. I can't wait. Yeah.
Final printed proof, ready to go and ready to go out into the world. So yes, by the time that this is aired, they will both be live. So wonderful.
Fantastic.
So if you haven't already, head to thrivetvshow.com and you're about to get all the links to access Mark's website and his book and find out more about him and the amazing work that he does, I know, in Canada and around the world and online. So great to connect with you once again, Mark. If there was one more thing you want to share with our listeners today, what would that be?
Well, I think the final thing is another tool that I leave people with, which is a simple sentence. It's, if I can do that, then I can do this. And the idea is, create a list for yourself. I call it an adversity archive, just to give it a name. But really, what are the things you've already been through? Because we've all got stuff. We've all got this laundry list of things that you've already overcome in your life. And 99 times out of 100, whatever you are facing now that seems challenging is not the biggest thing you've ever had to overcome. And so when we can look back and go, oh, wait a minute, I'm the same person who did this, 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 and this. This thing in front of me is no big deal. I can do that too. And all of a sudden you feel this empowering feeling of going, oh, I have all of this learned experience that I'm carrying into this new situation. And it seems far less overwhelming.
Wonderful. If I can do that, then I can do this. I love that. Oh, so true. So good. Well, thank you so much for your time, Mark. It's been so lovely to connect. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Lauren. This has been awesome. Yeah, great to chat with you again.
Fantastic. Thanks to everyone that's tuned in. That's been another episode of the Thrive TV Show. Go out and thrive.
Thank you for listening to the Thrive TV Show with Lauren Parsons. Visit thrivetvshow.com to access the show notes and discover our fantastic bonus content. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next inspiring episode.